The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It is November the 27th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And Mike Wolverton of K-State will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, Senate staffers say they're closer to reaching a deal on how to handle farm bill amendments. The Justice Department says a number of farm bill measures introduced by Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley are constitutionally suspect. And officials in the European Union are rethinking their subsidy cap. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Just after the bottom of the hour today, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. That happens each and every Tuesday. And along the way, I'll bring you up to date on how the relationship between land-grant universities and agricultural input companies has changed over the recent decades. It is not so different from what you've seen in the field. Just think how often a corn number used to stick around and how quickly it is turned around or turned out today. It's tough to stay up, isn't it? As you'll hear later, it's not so different here on campus. Stay with us for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In Chicago, on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat for the day at December wheat at $8.29, up 15 for the day. March contract at $8.51¾, up 17 and three quarters. And July futures at $7.20, up a dime on the afternoon. December contract in the corn pit, a loss today of $2.25 at $3.83½. The March contract at $4.75, down 2½. And the May contract at $4.10¾, down 2½. December futures in the corn pit, $4.29½, down 1½ for the afternoon. Soy complex, January beans, $10.91, down 12 and three quarters. March futures at $11.07¾, down 13 and a quarter. The May contract at $11.14¼, down 11 and three quarters. And November soybeans, $10.25½, down 12 cents. December bean meal futures, $2.90, down 2.80. January futures down $2.30 at $293.70 a ton. December bean oil, $46.30, down 39. January futures at $46.75, 55 lower on the afternoon. December live cattle futures at $96.10 from the CME Group, 80 cents lower. February futures down 57½¢, $97.95 the final price for the day. November feeder cattle at $108.66, down 19 cents a hundredweight. January futures down 37½ at $110.57½. December lean hog futures, $54.55. They're $1 and a nickel lower. Lean hog futures February contract at $62.20, down 37½. And the April futures managed a gain of 17½¢, finished at $67.07½ on the afternoon. Outside markets now, January crude oil futures, $94.45 a barrel, down $3.25 for the day. And the February is at $94.55, down $2.21. The U.S. dollar at 75.133 is up 0.274. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average is 114 points higher at this hour at 12,857.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Tuesday afternoon to take a look at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as well as the outside markets, is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
Maybe we ought to start with the outside markets this afternoon. A $3.25 loss at this hour, a barrel, for the January crude oil at $94.45. What's into that marketplace?
Well, you know, there's a couple things going on. We're looking for OPEC to increase production. On their December meeting, they're talking about, and it's pretty well regulated in the market, that it's going to happen. We've got the stocks, the DOE stocks tomorrow morning. They're looking for a slight drawdown, but not near the drawdown that they generally see this time of year, because we've had some decent weather. The East Coast has not been hit with any great big cold snaps. We are seeing cold weather forecasts from the Midwest next week, but not such bad weather on the coasts, and that's where the big consumption seems to come from, Todd. And also, you know, just along the way, I think there's just a little bit of idea that maybe we're seeing some topping action as long as going along in the crude oil, too. So that, of course, affected the bean oil quite drastically today. We did see a pop back on the close, but still down 39 to 44 cents in the bean oil today, very closely tied to that crude oil market.
And soybeans losing 12 and three quarter cents in nearby at $10.91 after they moved through the $11 mark earlier in the week.
Yes, and you know, along the way, there was a lot of chart watchers who were watching that 1090 close basis the January, and we had some bargain hunters buying below there, and then we had some people that sold earlier thinking if it did break through there and close below there, and when they saw that it was awful close to it, they was one short covering that helped raise things back up.
So we had the top of the spike for the nearby contract at this point, do you think?
Well, I think for the near term, that we're probably we're going to do some sideways action here for a while, Todd, and just sort of see how the exports carry on and see what this crude oil does do, and look at the outside markets that way. You know, the one thing we would really like to see more than anything is some stabilization to the dollar, and our economy gets back a little under a little better control. So, you know, because overall, we would still like to have a good economy here in the U.S. to along with these good prices.
You know, when we talked with the folks at the Andersons yesterday, they suggested that farmers were making quite a few cash sales for the corn market. Have you been talking to your producers about making sales?
You know, we have looked ahead, and we everybody, I think there was a couple advisory services today that pushed cash sales up another 10 to 20%, depending on your situation. And we've had a lot more interest in, you know, some put buying just to put some bottoms underneath here in the last few days. And I think that people are beginning to say these are prices I'd like to somewhat have some stability with, and these are going to really help me prepay some seed corn, fertilizer, and other things along the way before the first of the year.
How hard is it on farmers not knowing what next year's crop insurance might look like at this time and having to look forward and potentially make some sales?
I don't think that it's a big thought on their mind yet, because none of them are up into the area where they feel dangerous and feel they need the crop insurance protection against at this point in time. Very few farmers have pushed past the 25% unsold, Todd. So, you know, that's generally the first batch that they don't worry about that, you know, as to looking at things. So we haven't heard a lot about that. You know, we've heard a lot of talk and asking us more about the idea of the discounts if they use the stacked corn in their that way. And, of course, we can't give them the real answer on that because Washington hasn't given us the real answer on whether they're going to go ahead with that or not. We sure hope they are, because that would help the farmer, you know, maybe to the tune of 20% on his insurance bill, and we'd sure like to be able to do that.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the afternoon?
I think that we're going to watch the crude very close, and we're going to be very interested in what that report says in the morning.
All right. Thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. He comes to us each and every Tuesday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report at the bottom of the hour. Meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. And don't forget, at 25 after the hour or thereabouts, Mike Wolverton of K-State will join us to talk about the energy market. It all happens right here on the Closing Market Report. Here's what Ed Kieser says the forecast looks like for the two-state region. Tonight, Ed's calling for mostly clear skies. Lows will range from around 20 in far northern Illinois to 35 in the metro east part of St. Louis. And tomorrow in northern Illinois, mostly cloudy, some rain and a few snow showers during the afternoon. In northern Indiana, increasing cloudiness, some showers arriving late in the day. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds, some sunshine, and windy. Highs will range from 42 in the far northern parts of Illinois to 58 in the far south. Dave Dickey will be here in a moment with a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Senate staffers say they are close to reaching a deal on how to handle amendments for the pending farm bill floor debate. Congressional Quarterly yesterday afternoon reported that a deal would allow Democrats to offer at least 5 amendments to the farm bill, while Republicans might be given time for up to 10 amendments. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid may also allow debate on amendments relating to issues such as the estate tax and the alternative minimum tax. The U.S. Justice Department says a number of farm bill measures introduced by Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley aimed at the livestock industry are constitutionally objectionable. Grassley is calling for a packer ban on livestock ownership and authorization of a special counsel at USDA to investigate and prosecute violations of the Packers and Stockyards Act. European Union officials say they may rethink a plan that would cap farm subsidies. Large-scale producers are threatening to diversify their operations to get around the proposal, which would reduce subsidies to farmers who receive handouts in excess of 100,000 euros. The EU is also considering new policies that would phase out milk quotas, scrap rules on keeping land fallow, and end guaranteed minimum cereals prices. In other EU news, the European Commission yesterday proposed suspending import duties on all cereals except oats for the 2007-2008 marketing year due to worldwide wheat shortages. The Council may approve the plan on December 18th. Bayer Crop Science and MS Technologies have inked a deal to develop new soybean varieties. The two companies hope to develop multiple trait soybean combinations. And South Korea Trade Minister Kim Jong-un says the U.S. could lose out on a golden opportunity if it fails to pass a free trade deal with Seoul. Democratic congressional leaders have indicated they may not seek ratification. Jong-un says failure to ratify a free trade pact could have, in his words, negative repercussions on U.S.-South Korean relations. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Up next, our last installment of the weekly crop progress weather updates. Just a couple of states checking in this week, Iowa and Nebraska.
This is Joe Prusacki, State Director from USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service, Iowa Field Office, with the weekly crops and weather report for the week ending November 25th, 2007. The Iowa corn harvest is virtually complete. Only the South Central District has significant acreage remaining in the field. Other fall field activities, such as applying fertilizer, spreading manure, field tillage, and preparing waterways and tile lines, continues with few delays. The statewide average precipitation was 0.12 inches, or about one-fourth of the weekly normal of 0.47 inches. Temperatures for the week as a whole averaged 1.6 degrees above normal. Soil temperatures as of Sunday the 25th were averaging the low to mid-30s. Grain movement from farm to elevator rated 3% heavy, 23% moderate, 35% light, and 39% with no movement. The availability of off-farm grain storage is rated 24% short, 74% adequate, and 2% surplus. On-farm grain storage availability is rated 30% short, 68% adequate, and 2% surplus. 99% of the Iowa corn has been harvested, 1 percentage point ahead of last year in the 5-year average. Also, reporters are rating fall fertilizer application at 64% complete for the state. This is the last Iowa Crops and Weather Report for 2007. This has been Joe Prusacki with the weekly Crops and Weather Report for Iowa for the week ending November 25th, 2007.
This is Steve Parn reporting Nebraska's weekly crop weather report for the week ending November 25th, 2007. A warm start to the week along with no measurable precipitation allowed harvest to finish in most areas. Winter wheat conditions rated 55% good or excellent, below last year's 60%. This is the last weekly weather and crops report for the 2007 growing season. For December through March, we will issue monthly reports. Weekly reports will begin April 7th for the 2008 season. I would like to thank the dedicated FSA county directors and county extension educators who supplied information for these reports throughout the growing season. This has been Steve Parn of the USDA's NAS Nebraska Field Office in Lincoln.
And I'm Todd Gleason, extending our thanks to the state statisticians in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota, and all of those folks that reported in to them each and every week during the growing season. It sure helped us along in making sure we understood just exactly how well or not so well the crop was coming along across the Midwest. You can check back in next April as they'll be putting themselves back on the air right here at the radio station that brings you agricultural programming, not 5, but 6 days a week. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL Urbana. Well, up next, as you already know, competition in world agricultural inputs has changed dramatically in the last 3 decades. I'll have a report on what those changes have meant to the land-grant scientist responsible for evaluating the new products. Researchers at land-grant universities across the nation in the late 1970s and the 1980s often worked with new and novel agricultural products. University of Illinois entomologist Mike Gray recalls those decades with some satisfaction. He says in those days, companies and university researchers might work together for 5 or 6 years before introducing a new product. It meant the land-grant specialist would be very familiar with the product before it was commercialized and would know how well that product might work across a broad range of environments. Gray says the consolidation of the agricultural input companies in the mid-1990s changed that working relationship.
We find, in many cases, we are continuing to work with industry, we're increasingly looking at some of these new seed technologies, some of these new transgenic events for a much shorter period of time before they are commercialized. And I think in part, this is just a recognition of the exceedingly competitive arena that many companies find themselves in. And when you look at the shelf life of some of these new hybrids, we know that it's very, very short. So there are enormous pressures to bring some of these new products into the marketplace.
So a portion of the job of the land-grant scientist has changed, says Dr. Mike Gray, but that there is a much broader responsibility that he and his colleagues carry.
I think it's a case where we as land-grant scientists always need to be mindful that one of the most important roles that we play is providing unbiased, research-based information to our stakeholders, to our clientele, to the farmers we serve. I think producers should continue to look to land-grant scientists, whether at the University of Illinois, Iowa State, Purdue University, and look very carefully through the results of their testing programs, whether it's for corn rootworm, whether it's for some weed control practice or disease management practice. I think that role is an exceedingly important one that our land-grant scientists need to continue to play, particularly in this new and exciting period we're in terms of how we manage this broad spectrum of pests.
Gray also believes there is a role for the land-grant researcher to play in terms of the relationship with the industry, one that allows producers to critically evaluate new materials as they are quickly commercialized. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. It's a Tuesday afternoon, and we're joined this afternoon by Mike Wolverton from another one of the land grants across the nation at K-State in Kansas. He's a grain analyst there. He's going to talk to us a little bit this afternoon about the energy markets. We take those up each and every Tuesday right here on the Closing Market Report. Good afternoon to you. Thanks, Mike, for joining us today.
Good to be here, Todd.
Tell me about some of the work you've been doing with ethanol recently.
I've looked at the ethanol profit margin. I follow this over time just to kind of see where we stand. And based on yesterday's prices, profit margins are a little better than they have been in the past. Yesterday, about 13 cents per gallon profit, which is an improvement over what we saw in September and October.
Can you tell me historically how that matches up to the last couple of years when we were in the boom side of the cycle and maybe to some previous times?
Well, back when ethanol was replacing MTBE, ethanol profit margins soared to about $2.50 per gallon. Of course, everyone knew that was unsustainable, although the ethanol plants enjoyed it at the time, and many of them paid off a lot of their debt. And as we increased the production of ethanol, reaching the mandated usage, then ethanol prices started to fall and actually went negative in September or October of this year, but have improved about 45 cents a gallon since their low in early October.
And that should be good for the ethanol profit margins and the ethanol plants over time. Do you think they suffered much through the period where they weren't really getting a lot of money for their ethanol?
I think they probably realized it would be temporary, or at least they hoped it would be temporary. What they did was cut back on capacity utilization, which decreased the demand for corn, which is what we're concerned about here, trying to sell corn to them. They also, the industry also slowed the construction of new plants. But I think the real improvement in profit margin came about because of the soaring crude oil prices. We saw crude oil price jump about $20 a barrel over that same period, pulling ethanol price with it. So that's really what returned the industry to profitability.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that crude oil. Of course, trying to reach the $100 mark and then trading off pretty dramatically over the last week or so at $94.31 a barrel in the nearby January contract. It's down $3.42 today. How much of an impact might that have on the marketplace should we lose that $20 in the next 3 to 4 months?
Well, if that is the case, then we'll probably see ethanol prices fall drastically, just shadowing the drop in oil prices. And we'd have to then start looking at ethanol as a substitute for gasoline. And it can only do that at about two-thirds the price of the RBOB, which is the blending gasoline, because of reduced energy value. So if crude oil prices really fell drastically, we could see these profit margins disappear again.
And two-thirds the price of the RBOB December contract, and you'll have to forgive me because I don't read this one very often. Is it traded in dollars and cents as well, plus quarter
cents? The RBOB is in dollars. And yesterday, in order to substitute for that RBOB gasoline ethanol price, would have had to be $1.57 a gallon. It was actually $1.95. So you can see it might drop quite a ways.
It could drop quite a ways today. The RBOB trading the December contract at 237, I guess, 0.3. I don't know. It looks like they take it out four numbers after the decimal point.
So. those decimals are really important when you're handling that volume.
Yeah, and there's a lot of volume there. How much trade is there, in fact? Do you know?
Well, actually, the trade in oil, petroleum, and gasoline and diesel fuel is in the billions of gallons. We use about 140 billion gallons of gasoline each year, and about 60 billion gallons of diesel fuel. So this is the largest by volume traded commodity in the world, and moving an international channel. So it far surpasses anything else we do in other commodity industries.
And why don't you round us out in the last minute by talking a little bit about the biodiesel industry?
The biodiesel industry continues to struggle primarily because of the short supply of soybean oil and its high price. Soybean oil was at 47 cents a pound yesterday, which is about a 40-year high, and it's up 70% since the first of this year, and that really puts the processing margin in a negative territory. It was minus 80 cents per gallon. If it weren't for the $1 per gallon producer subsidy given by the U.S. government, the biodiesel industry would absolutely shut down.
We appreciate you being with us.
Good to be here, Todd.
Thank you much. That's Mike Wolverton. He's with K-State, where he's a grain analyst and joins us each and every Tuesday here on the Closing Mark Report as one of our trio at this point of energy analysts. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Don Day. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A judge is hearing testimony before he decides whether certain witnesses can be used in the upcoming child molestation trial of a former Urbana school teacher. At issue is whether Champaign County jurors will be able to hear from alleged victims from McLean County, where John White faces similar charges. White was arrested last winter, accused of molesting girls in his second-grade classroom. A Champaign man is in court this afternoon to answer to an attempted murder charge. 23-year-old Markele Powell is accused of shooting his girlfriend last night outside the office on Country Fair Drive where she works. India Dorsey is expected to recover from her wound. State records show Governor Rob Blagojevich propped up Chicago mass transit systems with money intended for other purposes. The Chicago Transit Authority and its suburban counterpart were about to run out of money earlier this month when Blagojevich gave them $27 million while lawmakers tried to reach a permanent funding solution. At the time, aides said the grant was coming from money set aside for railroad and rapid transit systems. But Blagojevich took $22 million from money reserved for bricks and mortar construction, highways, and energy projects. Blagojevich spokespeople have ignored repeated requests from the Associated Press to provide more details about the grant. The legislature returns to special session tomorrow to continue working on long-term fixes. Terre Haute's mayor-elect says a challenge to his election should be dismissed because it doesn't include his middle initial on the paperwork. Mayor-elect Duke Bennett's attorney filed motions yesterday to dismiss the legal challenge and a recount request filed by current Mayor Kevin Burke. Burke's attorney says Bennett is grasping at straws. Bennett defeated Burke by 107 votes in the election earlier this month. Burke filed for a recount and says Bennett was ineligible to run in the first place because the nonprofit he works for receives federal funds. People in Urbana get the chance today to guide how a key commercial area will look in the future. Residents can help city officials determine how to beautify Philo Road, the stretch between Florida Avenue and Windsor Road. It's undergoing a transformation as older commercial areas are overshadowed by developments such as the future Meyer store and new apartments and homes. Grace United Methodist Church on Philo Road is hosting a brainstorming session on beautification designs. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now to take a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don.
Good afternoon.
Kind of a nice day here, a little sunshine, maybe the mid-40s for the afternoon, but things not looking so good for the rest of the week across the Midwest.
Well, yeah, it's going to be very wintry, no doubt about it. We have a vortex, we call it a vortex of cold air, that's building up in Canada right now that is going to be sending spokes of energy and cold air into most of the northern half of the United States, including the Corn Belt. Really, just about everybody east of the Rockies is going to see some colder weather. And we see not one large storm, but about two or three medium-sized ones that will march quickly west to east across the country and produce occasional periods of snow, rain, ice across many areas of the Midwest over the course of the next week to 10 days. So definitely be ready for some wintertime weather conditions.
Sounds pretty nasty. Will it be hard on the winter wheat crop?
Well, the winter wheat crop could certainly use some moisture out of this system, but I'm afraid it may be hard on the winter wheat crop, as the cold weather may have some impact, as there will be little in the way of any significant snow cover to protect it. There's going to be some moisture in winter wheat areas, but not a lot. The best moisture is going to stay further north and east.
Winter wheat crop here in the United States in dormancy, but coming out of dormancy in other parts of the world, how's it faring across the Northern Hemisphere?
Well, across the Northern Hemisphere, is certainly we are making that transition to a wintry weather pattern. Over in Europe and over in Russia, taking a look at the weather there and precipitation chances, looks like good chances for moisture over in that part of the world for winter wheat. They're going to be able to get some moisture. Now, if we go into the Southern Hemisphere, moisture on the increase for South America and Brazil here over the next week to 10 days. They're looking at good chances for moisture. Australia, they've had moisture in some spots. They'll get a little bit of it, but it's going to favor the southern and eastern growing area.
And how is the planting season progressing down in Brazil and parts of Argentina for both corn and soybeans?
Well, not too bad. I think it's making steady progress, although the precipitation that's going to be coming in the next 5 to 7 days may slow things down a little bit.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the
day? Don't think so.
Thanks much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, joins us every Tuesday afternoon right here on AM 580. That is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at the day's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports right there on the World Wide Web. Just go to willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Todd Gleason.